5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. We have a liftoff.
Hey there, Earthlings. Welcome to another episode of The Danny Project, brought to you by Neo Abilities. I am your host, Tessa, and I hope you grab your aluminum hat because we're on another exploration into all things disability. If you enjoy what we're doing here on the podcast and would like to have access to some more exclusive content, please be sure to check us out and join the crew on Patreon.
Discovery, go at throttle up.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of The Danny Project. I am here with the lovely Megan South. Megan has an amazing story. Megan, you want to tell us a little bit about your mental health advocacy and your journey to advocacy work?
Sure, I would love to. My personal journey with transitioning into advocacy came after I had to seek personal help for my own mental health related struggles as well as my addiction related issues. In 2013, I faced a very dark point in my life. You might commonly, sometimes people refer to their experience as a rock bottom or like a low point. For me, this was, I described this as my bottom, you know, even though I had previously been in other, you know, low points in my life too, you know, but this particular moment was the trajectory for my life and my life journey here. Advocacy for me, when I was in the very early stages of my recovery journey, I spent a lot of time at my local hospital. I did a lot of different programs within outpatient, inpatient, different wellness tools, different coping strategies. And during an educational presentation, because like we did a lot of almost kind of like in-person classroom type education presentations and whatnot, one time one of the nurses there, after one of our lessons one day, she said, and this stuck with me, she said, if you want to advocate for mental health, we are the advocate for our own well-being. And I thought, what? Because I had never heard a professional really give another person that, I don't know if you want to say power, but almost like giving them like the, okay, well, this is for you to decide kind of thing. I more or less had experiences with, you know, doctors that were like, I'm the expert, you listen to me. Or counselors were like, I'm the expert. And so when I started to meet professionals that coming from a mutual respect kind of relationship, I didn't really know what to do with that. So I thought, like, I just want to get well. I don't want to change the world. Like, what do you mean?
Right.
But I just want to get well enough to go back to work. You know, I don't want to be like a global change maker or something. But unfortunately, a lot of the experiences that, you know, I would have along my journey kind of led to advocacy and awareness. And I mean, it wasn't an instantaneous thing either. You know, like I lived a long time in the mindset of, okay, well, I'm just a woman in with mental health related issues. I'm just an addict or someone who's deemed as, you know, unstable or crazy. Living in the rural province of Saskatchewan in Canada, there's still a lot of stigma around that. Mm-hmm. A lot of people don't want to, you know, necessarily think that they need help. And I mean, a lot of it's because of this ideal of like, you know, psychiatric care makes you crazy or something, or having to go on medication is a bad thing. It's not a bad thing to have to need it, but I think in a lot of ways too, my area has to look at ways to better integrate medical treatment and wellness tools, you know, as more as a holistic approach. And that's one of the things I've been working with a nonprofit out in Ontario, basically, and they're looking for people to help with research studies, to share experiences, and to raise more awareness with the policies here in Canada to help people get better integrated care and looking at ways to better incorporate that into healthcare policy. You know, because like that, I mean, that's the unfortunate thing is, as much as we would like to, I like to, you know, give people the benefit of the doubt and, you know, assume that everybody's coming from a really good ethical place, right? But sometimes that's not the case, right? I came across professionals in the healthcare industry that were very abusive and stigmatizing me based on sex or social status. And then a lot of that comes out in frustration. Professionals, like for me, they thought when I went through my bottom and I started to get honest, it was challenging for me to come up against professionals that they wanted to just kind of like medicate me. And they didn't realize that I had been abusing painkillers for, you know, of my prior working career, because I did a lot of work in manual labor jobs. You know, I was a single mom. You know, my daughter went to university last fall. She's getting ready to start her second year of her nursing degree. But at the time, like, I had to support her. So, like, I would do a lot of work-related jobs. I wouldn't tell people or my employers about my disability, like, the pain. I've had to tough through it. And in reality, I was putting so much strain on my body. And so when it came time to talk openly about some of these challenges that I had, it was hard. It was hard for me to do. And I mean, you know, the doctors, because I was a woman in recovery, I think brought up some of their biases too. And then, like, the, you know, sexism and bias there, they thought I was like some promiscuous bad woman or something, right? So instead of, you know, focusing on my well-being, some of these questions didn't really serve me at the time. And I'm thinking, I haven't, like, you. What do you mean? Why am I, like, why are you asking me this? And
right. It doesn't sound like it has anything to do with what you're there for.
No. And I mean, like, it was so irrelevant to kind of, like, you know, the mental health aspect of what I was going through. And that brought up more questions. And probably like a year and a half in, when I started to realize that, okay, my drinking was a big reason as to why my mental health issues were off, you know. And I mean, like, I had really high blood pressure. I was probably about 40, 50 pounds heavier than I am now. And I was just extremely unhealthy. And that was my motivation to give up alcohol. I'd seen my mother struggle for years as, like, an untreated diabetic. You know, all these experiences were what I saw. And I'm like, I don't want to be like that. So that was what led me to, you know, go on an alcohol-free journey. One of the things that my doctor had me do locally was group therapy for, are you familiar with DBT therapy?
Cognitive behavioral therapy?
Dialectical behavioral therapy.
Oh, no, I'm actually not. I probably I'm not as familiar with the clinical stuff, but what is it about?
It incorporates meditation and mindfulness, and it's designed to, like, bring individuals, like, out of trauma into the present moment.
Okay. I know when we were talking a little bit earlier, you mentioned that you had some sort of work-related accident that kind of led you into the cycle, it sounds like. Was that some sort of temporary disability, or how did that come about, if you don't mind me asking?
Well, looking at it from a self-reflective perspective, I was a person, I guess, for years that I tried my best to cope with life through drinking, you know, thinking I was doing what's best for my daughter, and thinking that living in this alcohol-related lifestyle of being the good working mom and putting my daughter in sports and always trying to show up, and then, you know, almost like compensating it with trying to go out and live, like, part of your lifestyle. You know, it was years of just emotional exhaustion, trying to keep up, thinking that was mine. But I mean, like, at the core, I was miserable, right? At the core, like, I was trying to keep it all together. Really, what kind of, like, just led me to have this breakdown, in a sense, was, like, I was at this job, and this is a male-dominated industry, and there's a lot of sexist comments, and the men would treat me like I didn't know how to use a tool. And I, because I was working in a chemical plant. Part of it was, like, weighing out jugs and measuring out quantities and stuff. You know, and, like, I would measure them right on, and the guys would double check my work because they didn't think I was smart enough or something.
Oh, gosh.
Years of that, years of not taking care of myself, all these factors just...
Yeah, it's like a culmination of things that tipped the scales for you.
Yeah, I was exhausted. But at the time, like, I was so used to kind of, like, that the mentality of the hustle culture they have, right? Go, 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 go. And I was so used to that when I came out of the hospital initially, and I had to look at ways to go back into career-related work, you know, I remember going out and applying for some of these jobs, not realizing, okay, you can't do them anymore, but I just thought I was going to get right back into it, right? And I would go to these interviews, and they actually had my well-being in their best interest. Like, they weren't going off on that hustle culture and they were saying, you know, like, are you, like, can you actually do this? At the time, I thought, who are they to question me? But no, they actually were looking at my well-being. And I had to learn that some people actually just care about your well-being. You know, I was not in a lifestyle like that. Sure, I wasn't used to compassionate care in a sense, you know? Mm-hmm. And that was something that stuck with me. And that was, I think that's like one of the reasons that I wanted to get into like peer support work. I just did some training back in June to get into peer support work, you know, the empathy that I have for others towards these experiences. But I mean, if I didn't have my own experiences dealing with stigmas and trying to find resources to help me, I wouldn't be able to identify with, you know, others and other people's struggles. There's a lot of misinterpretations too, I think, about disabilities. And, you know, it's not even just like in the medical system. Like I've seen it in career-oriented programs here too, right? Where individuals who are working in the field, they might have good intentions. You know, like I did like some goal setting workshop with a disability consultant. You know, I think she had good intentions. She said to me, I don't necessarily like the word disability. You know, again, I have to do my own research to kind of understand like, okay, so like, well, what do you mean? Like, what do you mean by that?
Yeah. So she didn't like the word disability or you didn't like the word disability?
She told me straight up. She says, I don't really like the word disability.
Okay. All right. But she was working in a disability organization?
Yeah, she worked with people with disabilities and helped them, you know, like goal setting and helped them work towards, you know, job-related career development, stuff like that. Now, today, I'm familiar with like terms like, I think it's differently abled.
Yeah, there's differently abled, handicapable, special needs. There's a lot of them. And there's a lot of controversy around the actual language that people use. I know the differently abled and very candy capable, and even special needs are generally frowned upon by the disability community. So it's interesting that she didn't like disability because there's a big movement to take back the word disability and to make it, it's not a negative thing. It's just a human experience. It's neither here nor there.
Yeah, I didn't really understand it. I thought you're a person who's working with vulnerable people and helping them to try to like find out what they're able to do. I mean, that's probably part of psychologically what she meant by it. But at the time, I was kind of like the advocate in me is, why are you working with the people with disabilities? And if you don't like us, you
know? Right? Like, yeah. Right. Well, and I think that's one of the big problems. I mean, you were talking about medical professionals. You were including like psychologists and counselors and those types of folks in there as well. And I think that's part of a problem that I've noticed is that a lot of these folks that are trying to help people with disabilities, to try to help in the community, they have internalized ableism, right? And so when they're helping folks with disability, they're projecting their own biases, like you were talking about with the medical professionals. Projecting their biases about women and stuff. And so you kind of end up not getting the real help that you need because you're dealing with people who have negative perceptions about something that you really can't change.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. So, you know, I think about some of the experiences that I've had with the professionals, and they're like, oh, just think positive, happy thoughts, right? That whole toxic positivity concept. And it's like, doctors monitor your mood. Do they need to increase your dosages? Is it the right medication for you? What are the side effects? Like, you're telling me that and I just go put on a like, what? Okay. Or like working with a nurse, and my doctor had just changed my medication, you know, and I met with him like 24 hours after a dosage increase, and the nurse was there who just gave me the dosage. And before the dosage, I felt one way. And then after I took it, I felt another way. And this is when I was hospitalized. It was like maybe a 20-minute time frame between the time she brought me the medication and I had to go meet with my doctor. And the doctor asked me how I felt at the time, and I felt different. Mm-hmm. Man, I feel kind of drowsy. The nurse kind of looks at me. She's like, that's not what you said 20 minutes ago. And I'm thinking, I'm on med. The reaction I want to have is like, why doesn't a professional woman, a psychiatric nurse who's giving medication, why doesn't she have the awareness to really understand like what to what? Why are you coming at a person from a place of questionability and unintegrity when all I'm doing is taking the meds? You're absolutely right. It's projection.
It is. It really is. What are your thoughts on the overlapping of mental health and mental illness and disability? So I think a lot of people think of those as two separate things most of the time. And so when your person has a disability and a mental health related, I personally feel like there's a lot more stigma involved with that than other types of disability, because how could that be so debilitating?
You know, I know from my own personal experiences, and as I started to look at more holistic resources and services and whatnot, because I knew, for me personally, I learned that my addiction related issues were essentially coping strategies for, you know, for traumas. And that was a big part of the reason why I was having such long periods of struggles within mental health, right? Mm-hmm. Now, I didn't learn that until I came into like recovery and peer support and learning it at it more from a professional perspective. I study a lot of great educators and experts that are in different fields of like wellness and mental health, you know, mind-body connection. And a lot of the research that they do shows very clearly indications show that people can recover from disability-related injuries and whatnot. And now in my area, now, like what they're working towards is bringing more trauma-informed care and trauma-informed resources. I think, and that's a big part of it, you know, like people are just kind of doing the best they can, yeah. Going on autopilot. You know, I remember when I was in this recovery journey, I would go to groups and a lot of people would identify themselves as like, I suffer from depression, I suffer from anxiety, and I suffer from this. And I thought, am I always going to suffer with this? Is there never going to be a point where I'm not suffering? Can we not improve our mental state? That was around the time like when I started to study people outside of like kind of like my local area. Are you familiar with Gabor Mate?
Yeah, I am. Yeah, it's like a tea, right? Oh, it's a guy. I thought you meant, I thought you said Yerba Mate. Okay, I got it.
Oh.
Yeah, no, I'm not. What is his name?
His name is Gabor Mate.
Oh, okay.
He's a doctor and he's like very trauma informed, based out of Vancouver, British Columbia here in Canada. But his work is very heavily based on educating professionals about trauma informed care. And he has like a program called Compassionate Inquiry, you know, for professionals to take in the field to help them like better identify. Learning about his work, for me personally, I thought, wow, here's someone like, number one, here's someone who gets, you know, and number two, probably the sense of like anger, like why is my local area not this educated? Why don't we have these resources here? You know, I see, and I'm kind of going on a tangent here, but I see all these signs, you know, these advertisements with like the mental health crisis, you know, and they're complaining about, like the high cost and taxpayers that it costs to keep people in the hospital and blaming the other, you know, blaming the non-compliant patients and stuff. Like they're not looking at it from a trauma-informed perspective and realizing that, the medication is part of it, but okay, like where's the therapy? Where's the wellness tools? Okay. It's so much more than that, you know, and where are these professionals that are like really like looking past kind of like the let's blame the government for the lack of funding? Where are the ones that are investing in themselves, you know, and really doing the work to improve their self? You know, like I'm starting to see here locally trauma informed care, but I'm thinking like, wow, you know how many years it took to actually bring this to awareness?
Mm-hmm. One of the things that's coming up that I keep thinking about is this idea of self-determination and self-empowerment. And it seems like that's lacking in the mental health world, as far as those that are supposed to be there to help folks with mental health challenges are maybe not providing that self-determination factor, or they're not providing the self-empowerment and the respect and kind of backing that person. It's more of a authoritative approach in some way.
Yes.
That's really weird to me. That's really weird, but I could kind of see that. I mean, especially if you're coming in with biases.
Yeah, and it makes it very, it can be very challenging for a person who's trying to listen to their, you know, they're trying to listen to their doctor. You know, all these questions are coming up. Like I'm a person who has gone through the advocacy to change doctors. So what that did was that gave me insight as to like, okay, how the mental health, how the healthcare system as a whole works. Because like I would get a diagnosis and a label from one doctor, and then I would go and talk to someone else.
Yeah.
And they would, and here's me thinking, oh, okay, well, like the people I would listen to in these peer groups, I suffer from this. So here I was living in the, oh, well, I suffer from this condition. And then right away, some of these other doctors would come, or professionals were challenging me. They're like, no, you're not. That's just a label. Do you agree with it? Again, focusing more on the advocacy component of it. And I'm like, man, I'm getting frustrated. I'm like, there's no peace here. You know, I spent how long working with this person trying to find ways to help myself recover from this label or this diagnosis that I believe to be true. And now you're asking me if I agree with it. You know, it's like, it's a lot of maneuvering around like, okay, well, we take, you know, and then this was my doctor. So I took what he had to say. I took it, you know, at face value. Yeah. And I took it with as to be true. And you're just going to say no. So, you know, and then coming into like other services that ask you about certain experiences, you almost get like, you know, then you would then like, I'm getting re-stigmatized.
And that's one of the things that I wonder. I mean, if folks who are people of color, and especially women who are people of color, you know, we get to that intersectionality component, right? So you're not just being stigmatized or placed in a negative kind of environment based on your race or disability or your sex. It's everything, all of it, right? Do you feel like that racial component plays into mental health services?
Yes. In my local area here, government officials are working towards is they see the need for Black therapists, right? I'm not just saying this as a Black woman from with my own self, you know, they also are doing a lot of work. I mean, there's stigmatization in the LGBTQ community, you know, Asian, in Canada, a big component is in the First Nations community. There's a lot of discrimination, or I guess in America, it would Native American, is that the right correct term?
Yeah, that community tends to go by Indigenous these days. But yeah, I mean, I wouldn't have known First Nations in Canada. Language is so interesting, right?
It is. I'm so afraid to have conversations with people in some times because I don't want to use the wrong term.
Yeah, I've had a lot of conversations with folks specifically about like the disability language. I mean, I think language is really important, but I also think that language can be kind of a crutch to not having to go deeper into the conversation. And like, you know, people are like, okay, well, we already had a discussion about that, so I'm good. Now I know what I'm talking about. Or I don't know. I just feel like language is important. But if you can have grace with one another, then you can get deeper and learn more about the other person and their experiences.
Yes. That's been a big part of my journey as an LGBTQ ally. These are definitely huge biases to mental health in a sense, and looking at ways to better address, you know, different needs and different diversities. Because yeah, like you can't just look at every person and think that, okay, like the woman who was trying to tell me to just think, you know, mystically, magically talk, you know, just think magic thought. Okay. I'll do that for a minute, then I have to go out into a rural area in Canada that still has a lot of racism, and I might, you know, and I might get like someone uttering a racial slur at me, or, you know, a rude comment or something. Like, I think there's a huge aspect of like being culturally responsible in different areas of like, you know, mental health and disability. And I mean, opportunities too. Okay. Like I know that at some of the colleges here locally, in my area in Saskatchewan, the trades are huge. I think that's why the doctor was pushing the trades. It's all about the trades. It's all about like, you know, like oil and farming and all this other stuff, right? So it's all about the trades. So I see all these programs about like, okay, well, if you want to get into this trade, we welcome people with disabilities and color and all that. And I'm like, for me, a person who I have an injury in like my knee from when I was in my 20s, I did some improper form of my squats and that was one of the reasons why I was on, like, I would take painkillers to work and kind of just push through it. But I mean, for me personally, these options don't work. Not every person with a disability can go into the trades. Where is your other programs to support, you know, like maybe a person who wants to, you know, get into office administration or beauty or something that is not high strung out manual labor. They gotta look at better ways to incorporate that. And I mean, that disability organization that I worked with, that organization lost its funding and it's gone. And I have to like wonder why, okay, because they couldn't serve a diverse need of people. It was like going up against more frustration because I went through them. They referred me to programs so that I could go and advocate against doctors, right? Because it's this big stressful continuum of like trying to get your voice out there and knowing what you can do and looking at the reality of what's there and then going up against like a doctor almost like, you know, aggressive bullying you into like thinking, oh yeah, you can just go back out and work in the trades and you can't. I couldn't. Okay. It didn't mean that I wasn't open to other opportunities, you know?
Right. Yeah. I know that when I talked to somebody else a couple of weeks ago, that one of the things they're like, people who have disabilities, we want to work. We want to contribute. We want to, you know, have careers and passions and stuff. And there's so many different factors that hinder us from doing that, not just physically or mental components, but also just the way society is built with benefits, with discriminations. There's just so much involved. And I know that folks with disabilities have a much lower rate of employment, at least in the United States. I would assume it's the same in Canada. And so we need those well-rounded different organizations to help folks with disabilities find employment. But we also need advocacy to teach people hiring. Right. And even like on a medical level, that still plays into your job. Like you were saying, they're trying to get you back into trade. Right. It's just not doable.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know the exact numbers and statistics behind disability and unemployment in Canada, but I'm willing to bet that it is quite high in a sense.
How do you think that mental health fits into the disability community?
I think there's different perspectives of it. Like number one, okay, you have the person with a disability who probably just want, you know, like a good quality of life. You know, it can feel very upsetting, you know. I know for myself, when I started to get really honest and open about my disability, it came with a lot of fear and a lot of almost like fear of being judged. And then in a sense, there was judgment. But because of the way that I hurt myself, you know, with being someone who was in, you know, active addiction, who, you know, cross addicted with exercising and unhealthy strategies in my 20s and thinking I was going to like lose 50 pounds in like 2 days kind of thing. So for me, there was a lot of shame in even talking about that. I lived in this mentality for years about like just keeping these things to myself. But when it came time for me to get honest, I had to learn to talk about it. And I had to learn to be honest about it, because if I didn't, I was just going to be a people pleaser and I was just going to like do what other people thought I was going to do. You know, I should do. And I found that there is a lot of misunderstandings, I think, and then a lot of stigmas came up, right? Like I would talk openly to, you know, people like peers and support groups about my injury. I would get weird questions like, have you ever seen a doctor for it? And here's the thing, I didn't diagnose myself with this injury. I went to a doctor, said, hey, my knee hurts and all this hurts. You know what he told me? You have a muscle imbalance and you messed up your knee. Like I didn't medically give myself this diagnosis. So it's like, I'm like, why are people asking me that? Like just kind of like these automatic responses, you know? And I really started to think about like listening, you know, and how there's a saying, and it's a lot of truth to it, is that people listen like to respond and not really to like listen. So it would bring up a lot of frustration, you know. And then like the thoughts of working with professionals, and then I'm thinking like, okay, so you have this as a disability, so what can you do? In a sense is an encouraging question. But for me, knowing what's available for people like in my local area and going to a professional who really has no sense and awareness to what's actually available versus just kind of throwing out this theory, to me, at the time, it kind of felt like this is extremely, you know, insensitive. You know, I'm like, you should know, you know, like, you should know what's available. And then having professionals not necessarily like do what they say they're going to do and follow through. So there came a point where I started to really wonder, I'm like, is this help? Like, is this constant frustration? Is this helpful? Or is this just kind of like something I should not pursue? And then I should focus my energy on more efficient wellness tools and whatnot, right? So, I mean, it wasn't like I didn't have awareness of different tools and things I could potentially use that I've learned over the years. But I realized that not everybody, number one, has that experience or that, you know, that awareness, because like they might not have ever been introduced to it. You know, there are people that have disabilities, you know, they are struggles to them. And, you know, day-to-day life can feel like a struggle. And, you know, they might have to go to see, you know, certain people that might, you know, might stigmatize you and whatnot. It's hard. Sometimes it's hard to find hope. One of the things I've heard multiple times is like, find support, you know, find support. That was one thing. But depending on different stages of my journey, different people provided, you know, different support within what they were able to look at. You know, like when I was newly diagnosed as a depressive person, going into that hospital group and saying that I suffer from depression, that was supportive to me. You know, when I was new to sobriety, going to a treatment center and identifying myself as having a drinking problem, that was supportive to me. So like in some cases, finding that support and what it looks like depending on the person and what they're experienced with, it can look different. And I mean, like, there's also been periods in time for me, like there's a grieving process in it. Like, I mean, there was a time where I thought like my drinking and drugging buddies were supportive, right? But the reality is that in my 20s, when that was the lifestyle I was in, that was all I really knew. But coming into my 30s and, you know, understanding more from like a wellness perspective and seeing how toxic that was, that's not supportive to me today. You know what I mean? All these different factors can really kind of play on a person's mental health. And I think it's hard to know sometimes what you need to do. Like, is this avenue going to be supportive, or is it going to just kind of like take you maybe back? For me, I think of it as like, maybe is it going to take me back into like a lower place in my life? You know, I have empathy for people. Like, I think of my friend who had a lot of hope and he wanted to do things, but the professional kind of gave him his reality and said, no, here's your meds.
Yeah.
You're not going, you know. You're not in a place to do that. And it's, if possible, I would suggest people. I'm like, I know that there are advocacy groups in my community that can help with like being able to advocate for themselves within the medical community. I would encourage people, if they, you know, if they have questions like that, you know, get second opinions. I mean, look for some of these resources within their own community, you know, because like everyone deserves to have like a positive quality of life within what, you know, like what they're able to do. And, you know, maybe it's just a matter of getting a fresh perspective.
Yeah. One of the things that I was wondering about a little bit is that, because you were talking about being in a hospital and having that experience, and one of the hot topics is institutions. And I didn't know if you had any thoughts about institutions one way or another.
Oh, yeah. Like, I have a few different perspectives.
Okay.
You know, I realize that based on that experience for me, a lot of people might look at me in a stigmatizing way, right? They might think, because there's, you know, there's a lot of people that are trying to hold it together, and they think that if they have to go into that, they think it's like emotional hell and emotional chaos. And I mean, there are so many different factors behind that too. You know, I think like you're going into an atmosphere, and a lot of your staff there are very verbally abusive. Like, and sometimes when I do go to my local community centers, there's a big notice there for people to report verbal abuse within the medical care, you know, system, and contact with the healthcare advocate, you know, and the disability advocates within your community, and whether they've experienced verbal abuse. And I'm thinking, like no wonder people don't want to go there.
Right. Yeah. That has bad stigma on top of the fact that, I mean, there clearly must be some stuff happening for them to be posting notices like that.
Yeah, like it's so scary, because I mean, like these are people that are probably in like the worst mental state of their lives, and this is like probably the time when they should have the most. They need the most compassion. From my experience, mm-hmm. my experiences from, you know, being a patient versus like being an advocate, and then getting involved with like policy reform and talking to other, you know, not just professionals but my peers. I hear like there are different perspectives.
Yeah, that kind of makes me think. So you were talking about doing policy advocacy. What has been your experience with that as far as like mental health and stuff?
Well, it's interesting because we were I was part of a group of other individuals across Canada, and we were doing different interviews to help researchers and impactors go forth with government leaders and policy changers to incorporate better ethics and better integrate some of these concepts of wellness into mental health and mental health care, right? When you look at it from a point of view of a wellness plan versus like, okay, just the symptoms here, and really giving that person like a bigger, wider range of like how wellness would look, that helped so much. Some of my experiences though, I'll talk a little bit about some of the frustrations, for me as a, like, I use a woman of color because I'm a woman of color, but from perspectives, but I mean, like, I'm not just using it, like, just using like my own racial experience, but I mean, like, people with diverse needs, like the LGBTQ community, maybe more disability focused, mental health care, stuff like that. You still have people out there with the belief, even though diversity and inclusion is like at the forefront of all, like, so many different organizations, and it's constantly evolving. You still have people that don't really see it at the point of view. They think that everybody should be seen the same. I said to like one of the leaders in the study, I said, like, it's great that people, people have this mindset of like multiculturalism and not really seeing biases come up. That's great. But not everybody out in the world sees things that way. Like, let's not totally turn a blind eye and think that there are not people out there walking around with their own biases.
Right, yeah.
And that need the policies incorporated for them to act. Like, I mean, you can't just take everybody at face value and think they're good people. I hate to say it, but...
Yeah, well, people have, like, their own internalized biases, all those different isms, right? I mean, and I think that's part of just human nature a bit, is being raised in a culture and around the people that we're around and stuff, you just pick up on things. But I think that's kind of where some of the responsibility comes in, right, is to try and work towards breaking those barriers down and listening to other folks that have different opinions and stuff like that versus acting as if it doesn't exist at all.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, if we don't work towards like bringing awareness to it, things are not going to change. People are still going to, some of my fellow advocates here across Canada, like in the Black community, they just, back in February, they launched a lawsuit because there was so much under the rug racism within government communities within the Black that nobody talks about, I know, like in Canada, as much as they would like to say we're a loving, happy country, and that's kind of like the stereotype that I would get from people when I would talk to outside of my country. They would, Canadians are known for being so polite, but you have to kind of take off this positive illusion that everybody's so nice here, and really like look at like ripping the band-aid off of years of systemic racism that nobody's talking about, right? So that's been a big part of the changes that I've seen over the last few years.
How do you feel like ableism fits in with that conversation?
When you say ableism, would that be like similar to kind of just allowing something to happen? I just wanted to clarify.
Yeah, so I mean, I honestly never looked up the official term, which I probably should. I can Google it. Right? Yeah. I'll Google it. But it's basically like discriminatory or false beliefs about disabilities. All right. So Google says that it's discrimination in favor of able-bodied people. So examples could be asking someone what's wrong with them, saying you don't look disabled, viewing a person with a disability as inspirational for doing typical things, assuming a physical disability is a product of laziness or lack of exercise.
Okay.
Yeah. So those types of discriminatory practices or thoughts about people with disabilities, how do you think that that plays into, conversations about other isms? Okay.
These are all very good points here, you know, and I'm going to reflect on them, but I also think this is something like I'm going to maybe discuss these with some of my research partners that are doing this policy work, because we focused a lot on the emphasis of integrating holistic policies into it. But I mean, this is all very important. You know, it's interesting to really understand what's going on now. Like, for example, like a few years ago, I applied for an education program, for example, right? I went in and I almost experienced like this toxic positivity of like, oh, well, you know, I'm sorry, it's not going to work out. But we wish you the best. Mm-hmm. And just kind of like all this like really low surface level stuff. And I used to question myself internally, and I used to go, okay, what could I have done better? What did I, you know, what skills did I need? What did I do wrong? How could I improve? But eventually what I realized, despite all the personal development work I was doing, sometimes it wasn't about me, right? It was about the biases of the other people. And when I learned that totally changed my perspective. It's very, very challenging to be a person who has a disability, you know, you have a disability, for me, like I felt a lot of grief around it.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of grief not being able to do what I used to do, trying to find things that I could do and could do. And yeah, like going up against a lot of very judgmental human beings that just thought, you know, like, oh, she's lazy. She doesn't want to get into whatever, you know, job that she used to do. And I would get so frustrated. I mean, these were people that eventually I removed them from my life in a sense, because I thought, if you can't take a minute to actually understand me, and if you can't even listen, and you're just going to, you know, use your own, sometimes mm-hmm. racial, sometimes disabled projections, whatever, if you're just going to see me in that light, then I don't really want you around me. And, you know, my activism kind of stemmed from that, because I started to notice that it wasn't just people from my former drinking and drugging, like these are people within the community. You know, there's still so many situations where, you know, a person doesn't know that they can advocate for their human rights.
Yeah.
You know, there were so many different questions that came up as I kind of evolved from, you know, just a sick patient in the healthcare system to someone who's advocating and looking at the realities as to what's happening. It's mm-hmm. been good to be able to like build relationships with the supportive people, mm-hmm. you know, the one, you know, like the change makers and the policy makers and the people that actually want to see positive change within the community.
Yeah. Well, that was making me wonder, going towards the end here, what can people do to be a better ally or to be a good ally for mental health and for disabilities and that cross-section that happens?
I think if somebody like is really called for advocacy, like for me, it was familiarizing myself with, you know, human rights policies. You know, I've educated myself by joining and aligning myself with organizations that are doing a lot of great work. Someone that I've really learned a lot from, like on the racial front and in the States, is Dr. Bernice King within the Dr. King Center, Martin Luther King Jr.'s daughter. That organization, I mean, that has... has really helped me. They do a lot of like non-violent communication, and they have so many workshops, different resources. And that's something like their work has really helped me to incorporate myself in my community and to be able to like kind of have the confidence to bring some of these ideas mm-hmm. to my local leaders. So, but I mean, I realize that's just for racism. Within human rights, I like Amnesty International myself, not even really just like from point of liking, but I've learned a lot from, you know, the a lot of the members there were the ones that started to advocate the Black community here in Canada and filing lawsuits. Amnesty International, but they have international representation. Yeah, so like they're all over the world, and you know they have different, you know, like campaigns around you know how to like get involved with human rights. If you have any activism training within your local area. Because that's really what kind of gave me like the foundational next step. And you know, getting around people that are the change makers, you know, that want to see the positive change, and you know, just knowing that you're not alone in it. Because you know, I could never orchestrate these beliefs on my own, you know.
Yeah. I think we were talking about, it's kind of like with children, we say it takes a village to raise them. I think it's very similar when it comes to advocacy. You know, we need lots of different folks working at it on lots of different levels, at the community level, individual, public policy, internationally. It's a lot that goes into it. I will link those people and organizations that you refer to. And as far as like where people can find you or follow you, What is your information?
Okay, so right now I'm predominantly on Facebook and Instagram. Yeah, I'm kind of in that transition mode where I started out as like an Instagrammer, sharing my journey of recovery and kind of advocating on there.
What are your platform handles?
What's my name? Megan Rousseau. I'm branching out onto LinkedIn and trying the TikTok. Trying TikTok, yeah. Which is kind of fun, I guess.
Yeah, I think it is kind of fun. Yeah, I haven't done that yet, but I think that's the way. Yeah, social media is always changing. So.
As a mom too, like I have. Yeah. I was a young mom, but I have a 19-year-old now. But I mean, growing up, there was, as she was growing up, you know, there was always kind of like that, mom, you know, like, mom, and why are you on TikTok? You know, like she would have been like. You know, like you're embarrassing me kind of thing. And it was like, even though she was listening to some of the artists that I grew up listening to, you know, like Drake or Rihanna, and try to tell me like, hey, well, you're too young to listen. You're too old to listen. I'm like, girl, I was listening to this while you were like four or five. Dude, come on.
Yeah. So it kind of changes. Yeah. Yeah. Aw. That's awesome. Well, I will link all of your information. And then I think you mentioned something to me earlier about 7 Cups of Tea.
Oh, yes. It's a good resource to have, I think, because a lot of like what we were touching on within like disability, mental health related, you know, stigmas and whatnot is like sometimes there's struggle to come. Sometimes like you need someone to talk to, in a sense. 7 Cups, like an online app/community. They have peer support, you know, peer support listeners that you can connect with kind of based on different issues mm-hmm. that they're struggling with. You know, basically like you would log onto the app and you would maybe pick something that you needed help with, you know, like if you were, you know, if you wanted to talk about like disability related stress or trauma or mm-hmm. racism, whatever, you could go there, you could select what you needed to discuss. And you could get connected with a peer support listener, and actually, even you know, if you needed more guidance, more professional guidance, they can help connect you with therapists as well. I'm a listener there as well, and I'm actually doing their content creation program because I want to learn to be a better writer for mental health related issues. Okay. But yeah, it's a really good app.
Yeah, awesome. I will include that in the show notes. And I just wanted to say thank you so much for coming on today and sharing your story and being vulnerable. I know these are vulnerable topics to talk about. So I really appreciate you sharing your story with us today.
You know, it's been a pleasure. You know, like when I was in a really low place, I had these big dreams about being a motivational speaker or something. But with that being said, you know, overcoming the adversities and really learning what it actually takes has been a totally different journey. You know, I think I used to just listen to Les Brown, you know, on my couch and think like, oh yeah, I'm just going to motivate people like Les Brown. And it's like, no, Les Brown went through some stuff, you know?
Right. Yeah.
So yeah, it's about the journey and the journey that it takes for us to, you know, become successful. Because my definition of success has definitely changed. I used to think it was like this linear destination that I would one day be at the top or something, but that's not necessarily how it is. There's a little course correct and it's not linear at all.
Yeah, well, and I think that's how life is, right? I mean, even though we want it to be about the destination, a lot of times it's actually about the journey. So, and I really appreciate you sharing your journey with us today.
Oh, it's been a pleasure. Happy to help.
Well, Earthlings, that's it for today's broadcast. As Carl Sagan once said, somewhere something incredible is waiting to be known. Thank you so much for tuning in this week, and I hope to see you next week. Be sure to check us out on social media at New Abilities Everywhere and use the hashtag TheDannyProject to continue these important discussions around disability. You can also join the crew on Patreon for more exclusive content. Until next time, peace out.
One small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.